This show furnished by Coast Psychological Services.
It's Friday night at midnight, which means you are on the couch with me, Dr. Leanna, and my fantastic co-host, Eric Scott Smith. This is a show about psychology. We explore the psychology of, well, everything, really. And tonight, a special and meaningful topic for me, the psychology of music. Yes, there is psychology to music. If you had a doubt, just have a listen to this. Or listen to this. Or what about
can I end all the seasons of my life?
If you're like most humans, the capacity for music is incredibly intrinsic to our existence. It's innate. It's powerful. And I am so excited for our topic tonight because, Eric, these are my two most favorite things.
Look how giddy you
are. Yeah, I came in here. I was like, yes, it's a good day. I get to talk about music and I get to speak about psychology.
I've never seen you so giddy. Not only do you get to talk about the two things that you love most in this world, but you also got to hang out with Steve Jones in the hallway earlier and talk about this topic.
I was going to bring it up if you didn't. Steve Jones, for those of you who are listening and don't know who Steve Jones is, he has a show on KLOS called Jonesy's Jukebox, and he is the guitarist of the little old band, the Sex Pistols, and I'm a huge fan of his, and I got to talk to him in the hallway today about music, and it was amazing.
He's such a great guy. He's a good friend of the Frosty, Addie, and Frank show, which I'm a part of on KLOS every single morning.
Yes.
And he's a weirdo, but he's a great guy.
You know, you have to be a certain way to start, you know, the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes a certain personality, a really cool, yeah, right? Fearless personality. And that's what the show's about today. It's about music and how it impacts us. And what I find fascinating, Eric, is our brains and how our brains relate to music. So we know that music is everywhere and exists everywhere within us, within our brains. Music is more encompassing in our brains than language centers in our brains. Isn't that interesting? We can identify and easily isolate language centers of the brain, but we can't do that with where music exists in the brain. It exists everywhere.
So when somebody is talking to me, a very specific part of my brain is firing. But when I listen to music, various parts of my brain are firing all at one time.
Well, maybe you're actually listening if somebody's talking to you. So if you're speaking to someone else, yes, certain regions, okay, localized regions of the brain get activated. But yes, the latter part of what you said is indeed correct. So we see that babies respond to music and sound. We see people of all cultures across the world throughout time responding to music. We have found artifacts of flute-like instruments that are 50,000 years old that are tuned and pitched not too far off from what we practice today. There's something called this universal Hertz frequency of sound that all things within the universe appear to respond to, and it just remains an absolute mystery of how humans respond to music, but we do in profound and meaningful ways.
And this quote I found and I ripped out and I've been holding on to it since I knew we were going to do this show. In the words of Plato, music gives wings to mind.
So sweet. Music. Yeah, I love that.
Isn't that nice? But that just proves how long music has been a part of our minds. Music gives wings to mind.
It absolutely does. You know, we keep time to music even if we're not voluntarily tending to it. We have this capacity for music memory, and we know that for clinical disorders, for impairments in neurological patients, we also see a tremendous therapeutic value, which we'll be talking about on this show coming up. We've got some great guests talking today about how music heals and their experiences with that. And we also seem to have this imprint on on our brains that get etched at a very young age that we respond to music in the same way throughout our lives. And I'm just curious, Eric, you play music, you write music, you're a music fan. Tell me, I want to know about what got you into music and what it meant to you.
Well, my mom was a singer.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, my mom is a very, very beautiful singer, and she has something wrong with her voice now. And I think it's a mental issue. I haven't fully grasped what exactly she has. There's a wire in her brain that's now crossed that when she is telling her voice to sing, it does the exact opposite.
Oh, wow.
Her vocal cords don't react the way her brain is telling her.
Oh, wow. That must have been devastating for her.
Yeah, so she can still sing here and there, but she had the voice of an angel, and she sang to me my entire childhood.
What did she sing?
Well, it's funny because I started, when I had my own child 2 years ago, I started singing songs that I didn't know I knew.
That's
singing Sound of Music. And I don't listen to Sound of Music. That's nothing. It's not on my playlist ever. But I had this baby in my arms, and for some reason, naturally, I started singing Doe, a deer, a female deer. And I was like, how do I even know that?
That does not surprise me at all. Our capacity for music memory is phenomenal. And our guest coming up and talking to us, Jane, in a little bit, is going to be talking about Alzheimer's patients and how they respond to music. That's a lovely story. So your mom just sang all of these songs, and now you're having these memories and accessing parts of your brain that you didn't know were in storage.
Oh, I didn't know I knew that. Mr. Moon. I haven't heard that since I was probably three, and I know every word of it, and I sing it to my kid every night.
And the same thing's going to happen to your daughter. We have another guest coming up, Leah Paul, who teaches music to infants and their mothers and teaches about pitch and tone, and that's important for our cognitive development. When did you yourself start getting into your own musical journey, writing music?
Well, I remember the first time I sang in front of people. I was in the chorus, but I had always been in the chorus. And there was an opportunity for somebody to sing a solo. And I had never stood out from the chorus. I just stood in the back. Sometimes I didn't even know the song. I would just mouth them really big, and people would think that I was singing. But I wasn't singing half the time because I was scared of what people would think about my voice.
Okay.
And there was an opportunity for a solo, and I had secretly practiced by myself. And then I shyly stood up in front of all the kids. I sang the solo. And this nerd that everybody picked on, nobody liked, everybody turned, and they go, dude, that was awesome.
Wow, the exact opposite response of what you anticipated.
The exact opposite. And then from that moment on, I started to pursue music in a different manner.
Oh, I love that story, Eric. You faced a fear. You challenged yourself. And look, when we take risks and we challenge ourselves, we often get this really important information about who we are and what's the right fit.
And for the record, I got the solo and we went to state that year. No big deal.
That's amazing. Amazing. I love that story.
What about you, though?
Well, right. So I've had this fascination with music and connection with music my whole life, which is why I'm doing the show topic and why we're here talking about this today. I also minored in musicology in college along with psychology. And I think it goes back to my earliest memories of my mom. So it turns out that my mom was similar cohort as Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and all these guys who were listening to American rock and roll in the early 60s, and they'd go get these rock and roll records, right, from the local record store, and they'd listen to Chuck Berry and Elvis Presley and all of this early American 1950s rock and roll. And my mom was in England, and it was, she says, dark and dreary, and she'd dream of Elvis Presley in Hawaii.
Wow.
And that's how she made her way to America. But she loved rock and roll music because it reminded her of her teenage years in England during this really difficult post-World War II era, the same sort of stuff that Steve Jones, who we were just talking about, probably responded to in the punk rock movement. And as a kid, she'd Saturday mornings, Sunday mornings, she'd come in my room and be time to wake up, and she'd open my bedroom door and politely sort of open my blinds so that the sun would kind of come in the room and wake me up naturally. And I would just hear Elvis Presley and Bill Haley and all of these greats. And I have an intense appreciation of rock and roll music. And I was just playing some music this weekend, and it's so interesting how you start to access these sounds and these tunes that you didn't even know you had sort of in you, right? But they, the more we connect to that place, the more this stuff unfolds.
Have you ever done that thing where you're listening to a song and you're singing along and you let it get away from you and you didn't know you could sing like that? And maybe it wasn't good, but you make a voice, you go, yeah, and the music gets so caught up in your spirit that you just let something out of you that you didn't know you had.
Yes, you access something, right? And that's why we're going to talk more about how music is so healing in so many different ways. There's tremendous therapeutic power in this, but also the means of expressing and connecting with emotions. Music can elicit, Eric, any naturally occurring emotion within the human body and brain. It has the capacity to elicit. It does a lot of other things too.
Wow. Well, I need to learn how to get elicit lust from my wife and then walk into the bedroom and just elicit emotion without her thinking about it.
And if you figure it out, you could put it in a pill and sell it to people on the market.
We're on to something. Well, we're going to be talking about the healing properties of music when we come back on the couch. Make sure you go to our website. Everything you need is right there, onthecouchnow.com. That's onthecouchnow.com. There's a phone number to get a hold of us, email to get a hold of us, podcast. There's our Facebook. I'm looking at it right now. It is so user-friendly. It's so easy just to get our iTunes, our link to clinical services, everything you need right there on thecouchnow.com. And we will be right back talking about the psychology of music on the couch with Dr. Leanna.
Talk radio,
790 KABC.
JW Heating and Air.
You've probably heard us talking about JW Heating and Air for a while now, about their thousands of five-star reviews, their core principles of honesty, integrity, and accountability, the fact that they've been awarded the coveted top 10 contractors in North America for 5 years in a row. But don't just take our word for it. Listen to what Dave from Westwood had to say.
Yes, we've used JW Heating and Air for several years now. They've replaced both of our systems. We love their work, all their guys, their service. We just love the whole company. We love them.
So if your heater or air conditioning are in need of a checkup, or if one of them stopped working altogether, pick up the phone now and call 877-JW-HEATING. That's 877-JW-HEATING. Or visit them at jwheatingandair.com.
JW Heating and Air. Our family serving yours.
California license number 921-266.
Why won't a plumber just tell me what it costs to unclog my drain over the phone? Is it that complicated?
No, it's not. It makes no sense at all. They obviously have a price.
Whoa, you've got a nice aroma. Who are you?
Mike Diamond, the Smell Good Plumber.
Will you tell me how much to unstop my drain?
$99.
But you haven't seen it.
Don't need to. Doesn't matter if it's a kitchen sink or a mainline sewer stoppage. The Smell Good Plumbers at Mike Diamond will unclog almost any drain for $99.
Almost?
Yeah, there are a few exceptions, but you can read all about them on our website before you call. Just go to thesmellgoodplumber.com.
Wow, you're like up front and everything. I just called a guy named Bubba who wouldn't tell me anything.
No Bubbas here, ma'am. Just professional plumbers who show up on time, smell good, and unclog drains for $99.
Call us, 1-800-446-MIKE.
Contractor license number 399170.
Cars, trucks, motorcycles. If it's got a motor, we've got your man. If there was ever a time you needed an automotive expert like Leon Kaplan at your side, it's now. The Motor Man. Sunday mornings at 8 on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Do you feel good? Is it because the music is making you feel good? That's what we're talking about on the couch with Dr. Leanna. By the way, she's a licensed clinical psychologist. And if you go to our website, onthecouchnow.com, there is a link right there where you can actually sit on the couch with Dr. Leanna. And today we're talking about the healing power of music, right?
The psychology of music, or as Oliver Sacks, the British neurologist and prolific writer, best describes it, musicophilia.
Oh, wow. That's a big word.
That's a great word. It's philia, you know, the Greek. My Greek ancestors came up with that word. It means a friend or a lover of music.
Well, that is what we are here on the couch. We are friends and lovers of music, and we've dedicated a whole show to it, and I'm very excited. Later, coming on the show, we've got Jane Canty on. She has an art and music workshop, so we're excited to talk to her. But right now, I wanted to mention, because we are talking about how music heals, there is actually a music therapist professor named Katrina McFerrin, who is helping young people create playlists to help their moods out. So what she's found is naturally we're drawn to songs that reflect our current mood. So if we're sad, we like sad songs. If we're happy, we like happy songs, so on and so forth.
Yes.
And those different songs can actually affect the mood that you're currently feeling. So if you are feeling sad, you can put on a happy song. And the idea is hopefully it'll pull you out of your funk.
Yes.
But she says be careful, because it won't work if you try to generate an opposing emotion too quickly. So if you're feeling sad, you can't just put on I'm walking on sunshine and it work. It's
correct.
Not going to work.
Yes, I would agree with her. And then there's all this around resistance to emotions. And so, yes, if you're acknowledging the emotion that you're experiencing, there's definitely ways that you can use music to help move you into a different space. And that's what we all do. And that's what's so profound about music. And what's just fascinating is that it seems to be a whole distinct, separate experience than language and speaking. And there's some debates, some scientific debates about our capacity for music and what it does for us as humans, the profound sense of meaning it has and the healing powers it has. And some people would say even the spiritual or transcendent experiences that come from that place. And so we have to ask, why did the capacity for music evolve? What does it do for us? And we see that it is incredibly therapeutic. So Oliver Sacks, whom I mentioned a few minutes ago, perhaps he's best known for writing, doing the screen play for the film Awakenings. He wrote the original book based on his clinical experiences. And so in the 1960s, he himself was a huge music fanatic, and he was working in clinics with neurological patients suffering with a wide range of movement disorders. And what he started to see was that people who couldn't initiate movements because of something like Parkinson's were somehow able to do it when they were hearing this music.
When they were just simply hearing it.
Yes.
Wow.
When they were engaged in music, they were able to move in ways that they could not move without the music. We see that in individuals who struggle with autism, one of the deficits or the difficulties with that diagnosis is ability to connect with emotional cues. So we see that by helping people who are on the spectrum listen to music, they're able to start accessing various emotions.
Wow.
That they weren't otherwise able to access. And we also see people who are aphasic, which in neurological terms means people who have lost the capacity for language or to speak, that when they listen to the music in the background of their favorite songs, can now all of a sudden sing words.
Wow. That is remarkable.
Yes.
And with all that healing power, it seems crazy that we're taking money away from student programs within the school system and we're taking music out of schools.
Well, this is incredibly upsetting for multiple reasons. And we're going to see with Leah Paul, one of our guests today, how cognitive functioning improves in kids with special needs when they are taught how to play music. But first, let's talk with our guest, Jane. Jane is a phenomenal person. Jane and I met Eric through music. Actually, music brought Jane and I together. And she is a writer, an artist, a songwriter, a teacher, an activist. You do everything. Jane, are you there?
Yes. Yes, Dr. Liana, thank you for having me.
Jane, thank you for being on the phone, and I love that you're here today, and what you do is just phenomenal to me. You are a woman of many talents. You're a Renaissance woman. You write songs, write stories, you perform, you do comedy, you do so many different things, but it sounds like one of your loves has been this art and music workshop that you developed, and you go to various clinics and places and work with the memory impaired and other types of people playing music. Tell us about what you do.
Well, it's mostly memory care facilities. I do work with all levels, elders, but I'd say 90% of my work is with memory care. What I do is I set up a watercolor program. I have lots of different lessons. And then once we're all set up, I have so many different groups of, I could go 30 people or 15 people. But anyway, I set them up. And then because when I was really young, I was so hooked on standards and, musical theater and all the, Sinatra and all that stuff just pumped into my head, into my memory.
From your parents?
From my parents and older brothers and sisters. So I had already, I love that music. I mean, there's no one like Gershwin and Cole Porter. That music is incredible.
Anyway. Agreed.
So I set up the watercolors, mostly watercolors. We do collages. We do other things, but watercolors, non-toxic in case, I have someone who's trying to eat it or whatever. I was every kind of patient you could imagine. And so all of a sudden we start singing, because we do landscapes. So it's blue skies smiling at me, or Somewhere Over the Rainbow, or Harvest Moon. And they're painting
great.
A Harvest Moon, and they're singing along, and it's so incredible. Also, their artwork is amazing, too. Many can outpaint me, and they don't even realize. People forget that they still have these. I see people actually improve as their disease, because I come every week to these different facilities. I see their work improve, though they're, the disease is progressing. So
yes, and what you were saying to me is that you work with people, Jane, who don't even remember at times their own names or family members, but yet you will play one of these songs, and what happens?
It is so amazing, Dr. Liana. They will totally wake up, look at me, and sing every single word to Sunny Side of the Street.
That's amazing.
To, Stormy Weather, to Sing It in the Rain. I mean, I watch their mouth, I hear their voice, they'll tap to the rhythm. It's so incredible. And then to add the art to the music simultaneously is double stimulation. It's way better than any crossword puzzle or brain game you can imagine, because it's
accessing these different parts of the brain. And that's what we were talking about early, these sort of separate, distinct processes between language and thought versus our musical experience and how that manifests. And it seems to be so distinctive and separate and more comprehensive and encompassing than these other systems that we have. And what you're saying proves that. Someone can't remember their name, but yet they have this memory for these songs and these tunes that they heard, decades earlier.
It's just amazing. Yeah. And enunciate every word. I mean, I think one of the first times I became inspired in this work was a friend of mine had a stroke, and I would go and sing show tunes with him, and his language started to come back. He could start, because he could only sing. But
yes.
When he finally had therapy, when I would sing with him for hours, his language would come back much faster than any other kind of therapy that he's doing.
Yes, and we just spoke about that research with individuals who have aphasia or aren't able to speak.
Right.
Jane, tell me a little bit about how you've seen music heal people or bring people together.
Well, I really believe that live music, and it's so sad, and I agree with you that they're taking music out of schools, and it's got to be the reverse. It really should be, because live, being next to them, singing, and they're feeling the vibrations and the emotions. Mm-hmm. It completely opens them up. And I've also seen, just like you were just talking about, when you're sad, and I sing a song like Stormy Weather, which is incredibly sad, or Mood Indigo by Duke Ellington, mm-hmm. that you will watch their face. And you know that the emotions, the memories are tied. They're incredibly sad. So I've learned so much in my 3 years of doing this that I've sort of taken out the sad songs, because I can see it in their faces. Like, it's just the same. It's such a sad, horrific disease. So I have to keep it upbeat. But it's all tied to the emotion. I mean, the caretakers or the family members will turn to me, and this is while they're painting and singing at the same time, and all of a sudden they'll blurt something out and they'll start talking and they'll say, "Oh my God, I haven't seen Mom say that much in so long. You just opened her up, you know," or "Look at Dad, he's pounding the table like it's a drum in perfect rhythm," or, you know, it's just...
It must be really fulfilling work for you to walk through that. And Jane, you're doing good work out there. Keep going. Keep helping people. Where can people get a hold of you, Jane, to learn more about the work you do?
Oh, it's, you know what, I'm building a website as we speak because I'm working all over the city. I'm pretty busy, but just email me, Jane Cantillon, C-A-N-T-I-L-L-O-N, Cantillon, @gmail.com.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jane. Keep doing good work out there, and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Oh, thanks again. Take care.
We will be back. We appreciate Jane, and I've got a study when we come back that actually reflects exactly what Jane was just saying. Music may actually slow mental decline.
Yes.
So I'll tell you all the details of that when we come back on The Couch with Dr. Leanna.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News. I'm James Stanley with this news update. Attorney Christina Prejean has announced tonight that she's dropping out of the race to succeed retiring Republican Representative Daryl Issa for the 49th Congressional District seat, citing the large number of her fellow Democrats that want that seat. The coastal district stretches from Dana Point in Orange County to La Jolla in San Diego County. A Los Angeles man has pled no contest to a felony charge for the beating of a transgendered woman in Hollywood nearly 5 years ago. 25-year-old Nicole Sheikh Hanazarian is to be sentenced on September 4th in connection with his no contest plea. A co-defendant in the case made the same plea and got 3 years probation and was ordered to pay nearly $25,000 in restitution. The attack happened near a metro stop at about 2:15 in the morning on May 31st, 2013, along a stretch of Hollywood Boulevard. KABC SoCal weather. Have about a 40% chance of showers across the area with a low of about 50. Right now it's 53 degrees in downtown Los Angeles. I'm James Stanley, 790 KABC News.
This is Meryl Schindler with the Daily Nosh here on KABC, sitting here with Greg Doolin from Doolin's on Crenshaw. You know, along with your amazing entrees, there are the side dishes, which there are people get pretty obsessed with. Is there a number one?
Well, you know, Meryl, everybody has their favorite, but we carry all of the traditional Southern sides. You know, collard greens, candied yams, macaroni and cheese, black-eyed peas, red beans and rice, corn, okra and tomatoes, steamed cabbage, and our delicious homemade cornbread stuffing.
Cornbread is a wonderful thing.
I love
it. It's just a joy. Yeah. It says, you know, I could live on cornbread. I could live on the sides. You know, and I bet there are people who do.
All the time. We have a lot of customers that just eat the sides.
It's what you'll find at Doolin's on Crenshaw. But, you know, don't look down your nose on the fried chicken. It's pretty darn fine. And it comes with three sides, we should mention.
That's what people love about it. They can get their favorite items
at Doolin's on Crenshaw.
News. Talk. Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC. It's coming. Coming. Back. I know. Starting Monday. Keep it here for more details. 790 KABC.
Brought to you by Bristol Farms, your Southern California local food store since 1982.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, riding down Santa Claus Lane. Blitzen, blitzen, all his reindeer pulling on the rain.
Okay, don't go anywhere. We're not switching to Christmas music, I promise. I'm trying to prove a point. And there's a headline out. Welcome back to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna, by the way. There's a headline right now that says Christmas music could be bad for your mental health.
I believe that. I did not need to hear that study to know that.
Well, they're saying, and this is very interesting, that especially people who work in retail, but people who hear Christmas music nonstop, if you're one of these people that, you know, November 1st, you start listening to Christmas music, and some radio stations have already flipped to all Christmas music. If you're one of those people, they say imagine an upside down you.
Mm.
And that is the chart of your tolerance for something like Christmas music.
Oh.
That you start to like it, you love it, you love it, and then eventually you start to hate it, hate it, hate it. And on the downward spiral of that you, you're focusing so much of your brain power when you're out and about on tuning out Christmas music that you're actually not able to focus on other tasks as well. So your mental health then begins to deteriorate because your mind is trying to do too many things at one time.
It's cluttered. It's overwhelmed.
Exactly.
That makes perfect sense to me. So the moral of the story is don't go to the mall.
Yeah, ever. Especially
Don't celebrate Christmas. No, that's not what we're saying. But yeah, those retail stores. I actually used to work in the mall, Eric. Yeah, the Del Amo Mall when I was a teenager.
Quit bragging.
I know. that was a long time ago working in the mall. But I absolutely know that fatigue. You know, there's all sorts of things that the brain can do around music that's really fascinating. There are some music-related brain disorders where people start hearing melodies like that internally, and they can't stop. It's just a constant tape in their head of the same kind of melody sound over and over again.
But I'm a musician, so when that happens to me, I go find those notes on a guitar, a piano, whatever it is, and then it's out of my system.
Okay, so you get to a place where you're just like, I can let it go now. I often wondered that if you have a song that you're singing in your head, and if you actually go listen to that song, how does that work? Is it some sort of a release? Maybe your brain needs to process it in some ways?
There's something. My wife, she gets very frustrated because we have a 2-year-old, and sometimes something will hit me out of absolutely nowhere, and I have to stand up and go to my recording studio room and drop whatever I'm doing. And it doesn't matter if we're having family game night or whatever. I go, I have an inspiration. I must leave. And she cannot stand it.
She knows how to deal with that. No, there's something about that need to express in that moment. It's this sort of release, this catharsis, this so much that happens in those moments. And the brain and music is just a fascinating combination. We know that some people have this neurological condition or syndrome called synesthesia. So people who have synesthesia have this intercross between various types of sensory information. So they might be able to taste the things they see. And they can also, when they are exposed to sound, they can see it expressed visually through colors.
Are you familiar with the artist Lorde, L-O-R-D-E?
I am, indeed, yes.
She is actually one of those people who suffer from that. She tastes music.
She tastes music. Yeah. That is such a fascinating condition. I'm wondering how that helps artists in their creative process. By the way, we always want to hear from you guys who are listening. So please go to our website and let us know what you want to hear about, what you want to talk about, whether you have questions or not on thecouchnow.com. And speaking of special musical talents, our next guest, Leah Paul, is a musician. She's a flutist. She's also a composer and arranger. She also has worked extensively with children teaching music, but she has worked specifically with children who have various developmental disabilities and disorders.
Wow.
Yes. We also know that Leah has a perfect pitch, and the way she describes what happens in her brain is really fascinating. Are you there, Leah?
I am here.
Hi there, Leah. Thank you so much for being on the couch. I just introduced you by saying that you have a perfect pitch.
Oh, I have a perfect pitch.
You have a perfect pitch. You do a lot of different things, Leah, and I love that you're here talking about music. You've helped teach music to students. You yourself play music. You're a mom, and you now have a music class and workshop that you're just getting up and running for babies who are, I think, under 24 months old. Tell me a little bit about what music means to you and how you think it is healing for people.
I think to me the thing that's really coming to mind about that question is music is just really a way for people to access a lot of things for themselves. I've really seen with kids, you know, of all different abilities and ages that you can almost always get through to a kid with music, whether it's, you know, learning an instrument or getting them to talk about music they like, or you know, even giving them a break from something that's difficult for them, music can be great for that. So I just think it's a really good way to, you know, be able to communicate with kids, and especially kids who maybe aren't so good at communicating, you know, in everyday situations.
Right. And I was talking a little bit earlier on the research of those who are on the autism spectrum and how music can help connect them with various emotions. But we've also heard of studies that have shown kids who are exposed to music at earlier languages have enhanced cognitive development. And you have shared with me before that this is perhaps the most notable outcome of teaching music to kids with special needs.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with special needs and without special needs, I really can see, you know, the gears in the brain working and developing when I'm teaching kids music. And
what kind of things, you know, do you see, Leah?
I see them able to kind of process information in a way that I don't think their math or science or, you know, reading teachers are necessarily seeing. Playing music is really complicated. There's a lot going on. You know, there's like the physical element of, you know, just having the coordination to play an instrument, which mm-hmm. for some kids is a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You're learning a new language, you know, one that doesn't use words.
Mm-hmm.
And your brain's just really having to put it all together. And,
yeah.
I think because as humans, we're so drawn to music and have the desire to listen and create, it allows us to kind of skip over all the hurdles that are there, you know, when we're learning other things.
Yes.
That's kind of what I've seen the most.
Yeah, so you've worked with some of these students over the course of a few academic years, and you can really see improvements in their developmental process.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it depends on the situation and the kid, but I've seen kids who I know are, you know, really struggling in school and maybe don't feel that good about themselves, and then in music class they're able to, you know, have these accomplishments that really give them confidence, and I think that that can transfer over to other areas of their lives. And, you know, and then there are kids that learning music is harder for them, but I still teach that, you know, music is there for everyone. It's there for all of us to enjoy. And I always like to tell them, you know, how I was like the worst one in gym class and always terrible at sports, but that, you know, it was still there for me. It's still there to have fun. And, you know, no one, you know, has a natural affinity for everything, but that music has something to offer everyone.
I love that. I would agree with that 100%. Leah, tell us about this concept of having a perfect pitch and how you realized your brain could do that.
Sure. So it's kind of a funny thing for me to talk about because, you know, classical musicians, like when you go to music conservatory, there's always some people who have perfect pitch, and there sometimes it can be kind of obnoxious to be like, I have perfect pitch. So it feels funny to be talking
yes,
about
I
it.
Yes, I know. Well, I'm saying it for you. I'm saying it for you, Leah, so you can remain modest.
Okay.
As we proceed.
Basically what perfect pitch is that, your brain has a memory for sound in a way that not everyone's brain is able to. Like, for example, I can just sing you the note C, you know, see, and my brain just knows that. Most people, their brain can't really remember where that is. So it's just a type of memory. That's how I think of it. And I discovered I had perfect pitch when I was in high school in a group music class at my school. And one of the teachers was demonstrating something badly on an instrument and saying, you know, what did I do wrong? Can someone tell me what I did wrong? And I said, well, you played that in the wrong key. And he said, how do you know that? And I said, well, because you did. Mm-hmm. And then he played a note and he said, what note is that? And like, I think it's a G. And he played another note. And then he brought up perfect pitch. And I went home that day and sat at the piano and played all the notes and then closed my eyes and kind of tested myself and was like, oh, cool. I have that. And so, yeah, a lot of times people discover they have it much younger. You know, if they're taking violin lessons, the teacher will check for it when they're really young. But because I discovered it later, it was something I kind of had to teach myself, but I had the ability, you know, because it was there.
I love that. And the experience of how you access that is just mind-blowing and phenomenal to me. We have to wrap up, unfortunately, Leah, but you now have a music class that you teach to little ones who are 0 to 24 months old. Where can people learn more about that?
If they go to sweetpotatomusicla.com, I have a lot of information on the website there, and we're just getting going, and we're having a lot of fun.
sweetpotatomusicla.com. I love it. That's adorable. Thank you so much for being here talking about the psychology of music with us today. Leah, you've been listening to On the Couch with Dr. Leanna. I am a licensed clinical psychologist. We are here with you every Friday at midnight talking about psychology. Stay tuned.
Talk radio.
790 KABC.
Coming up on the next drive home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips, we'll be your greasy hamburger to nurse your Oscar hangover.
That's right. And speaking of greasy, we have Scott Mans. Totally kidding, because he's here. We have Scott Mans that's going to come back, and we're going to talk about all the winners and the losers at the Oscars.
Live and local, right after Dr. Drew's Lauren Savant, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
I'm Dr. Nazarian, the Beverly Hills dentist. My number is 310-277-8232. Give me a call, 310-277-8232. Also at thebeverlyhillsdentist.com.
This is Meryl Schindler with the Daily Nosh here on 790 KBC. I'm sitting here with Greg Doolin from Doolin's on Crenshaw and two other Doolin's restaurants. And you are famed, and justly so, for your fried chicken. People are obsessed with fried chicken. They are mad for fried chicken. You got a secret you want to share?
No, Meryl. But our fried chicken is delicious. And it's nice and crisp, and I actually brought some to KABC Radio this morning.
And people were out there, I could see them just staring at it. The sight of your food makes people so hungry, and it's like, it's funny how fried chicken is, it's an object of desire. People go nuts for it.
Well, you know, people get excited about soul food in general, man.
Yeah.
They really love it, and you know, when we serve them in the restaurant, we can see the excitement in their eyes, and it's really something to see.
And it's something to eat, too, along with all the fixins. It's Doolin's on Crenshaw. You can't go wrong going to Doolin's.
Welcome back to On the Couch with me, Dr. Leanna. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist here with my fantastic co-host, Eric Scott Smith.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Do you like that? I was like, what word do I want to put
fantastic.
In there?
Fantastic.
Fantastic's a nice
that.
One.
I will
change
take that.
It each week. Fantastic, amazing, wonderful. I used to call when the show was something else, and my other previous co-host, I would say lovely.
Oh, I would be lovely.
But can you be a lovely co-host?
Sure.
I don't know about that.
I would love to be considered lovely.
Okay, I'll add that into the lexicon.
We're talking all about music and the psychology of music, but did you know that it's not just humans who are affected by music psychologically?
Well, I did know that, but maybe the people who are listening didn't.
Well, they have released, and this is absolutely true, I'm not making this up.
Wow,
if you go to a website right now, catballads.org, cat ballads.
Catballads.org.
That's a real website. And scientists have created cat-friendly songs. They say that they have studied cats, and specifically cat purring actually can calm other cats down.
Wow.
So they have generated these songs. They've created songs that are friendly for humans, but then they do them in cat mode.
I love this.
And I actually have a little sample.
I love this. I love that you have this, Eric.
So if you have a cat right now, I want you to crank your stereo.
Yes.
And I want you to put that cat right in front of your radio. And then I want you to call us after this is done at 949-54-COUCH and tell us how your cat reacted to this.
Yes.
Because this Please. Is one of the cat ballads from catballads.org. Quite nice.
I am in awe of this right now. I am in awe of this.
And
this
even better, if you go to catballads.org right now, you can get one of the songs that they do in cat mode, which includes some of the purring and the calming bird sound effects for cats specifically. They've even got soothing images of balls of yarn and food being poured in bowls, and your cat can actually watch. And they have psychologically studied the colors and the way a cat's see. So you can actually go to the website and flip the entire website to cat mode, and they can look at the website and it calms them.
That's phenomenal. That doesn't surprise me. And you might not also be surprised to learn that I, one, have cats.
Oh, do you?
And yeah, I do. I have cats. People go, how many cats do you have? And I go, eight.
Eight?
No, I don't really. That was a joke. And that's always the response I get. Eight.
Well, I have two, and two is overwhelming.
Two can be a lot. I had two cats, and one cat passed about 6 months ago. It was a really hard time, actually. And as he was going through the dying process, I was looking for soothing sounds to kind of help him, and I saw him respond to those sounds in a more peaceful, comforted way. So that doesn't surprise me. And as I was listening to that purring sound,
mm-hmm.
right, I noticed something's happening within myself. There's something about the frequency or those sound waves of purring that access parts of self, I think. And this is the whole idea behind sound therapy. And we know that certain sound frequencies have a lot of significant effects on all sorts of things. There was a music professor at UC Berkeley who was able to show how certain sound waves can heal cancer cells.
Cancer cells.
Cancer cells.
Wow.
Yes. We know that there's something about when you do yoga. I don't know if you've ever done a yoga class, but at the end, they chant, I'm not going to do it.
Oh, come on.
People are going to stop listening to our show. But they chant OM, right? A-U-M. And it's because it's supposed to emit a vibrational frequency or resonance that is deeply kind of grounding and calming and stabilizing. So there's an absolute science to the hertz or the wave, the sound wave patterns and what that resonates and how that impacts us. So this also raises questions for sounds that are very, very disturbing or upsetting or jarring to our systems. And what effect does that have on human behavior?
And what sort of effect has it been proven to have on people?
Well, it can increase aggression. It increases anxiety response. It can increase cortisol levels.
Wow.
In the blood. So your body's basically in a constant fight or flight response mode, at least living here in the city. So if you're driving and you're hearing sounds of honking horns, and we can only have so much of that. And just as we were talking about that Christmas music earlier, you have to do a lot of work to try and balance your energy and tune out all of those distractions.
Right.
And it can be fatiguing for the brain.
And I believe that because if I hear, I have a 2-year-old, and if I hear Let It Go from Frozen one more time, it does make me violent. I get violent when I hear it. I cannot stand that song anymore. I'm
Do you have
so
to go take a deep breath and put in some
I know every word
music.
Of that movie, and why do I do that? I hate it so much.
I can see how that would be frustrating.
Before we get off of this topic, we usually like to give some takeaways, and I know this week you'd like to tell the audience a little bit about using the gift of music.
Yes. Well, I want people to be mindful of the role of music or sound or the healing benefits of sound, or perhaps the way that certain sounds and music patterns are perhaps impacting them adversely. So we have to be mindful of this part of the self, the musical self, and what we respond to. I think that it's important to listen to music that facilitates an emotional experience that's meaningful and helpful for you. And if you're struggling with painful emotions that you don't understand and you're gravitating towards certain types of music, use that as an opportunity to acknowledge what might be coming up for you, what emotions might be evoked, what you're trying to connect with or process or understand. And then there's something about tuning into that and acknowledging that experience through the music that I believe helps us process what we're experiencing so that we can move forward. And I think that all creative expression does that. I also want people to be reminded that if you want to focus, we know that listening to Mozart and certain types of classical music does enhance focus and concentration. If you want to be soothed, nature sounds like music, patterns and rhythms of nature, just birds singing can be incredibly calming. We can use sound to connect at times even with anger. When I was younger, Eric, I was really nervous about getting angry. I had such a fear of conflict, and I wasn't connected to anger in a way that was helpful for me. So I would listen to a lot of punk rock, hence the Sex Pistols, and that would connect me with like energy and feeling empowered and strengthened. For me, in my yoga practice, I do some chanting, and I do, you know, I have a gong at home, and I have some singing bowls, and I listen to them, and it becomes meditative for me. So there's a lot of different ways that people can use music in healing capacities, and I'd encourage everybody to learn a little bit more about it.
So be conscious of what you're taking into your ears, people.
Absolutely.
Before we go, we've only got a couple of minutes, but I do want to give Pam a little bit of time. She was a listener of last week's show. She heard our entire program on homelessness, and Pam, we appreciate you listening to that entire show.
Yes, we do, Pam.
And you called and left a voicemail on the voicemail line, which is 949-54-COUCH. And if that's too hard to remember, just go to onthecouchnow.com. It's right there on the homepage. And I want to play a little bit of her voicemail in our last couple of minutes of show, just because I think that she deserves that time.
Hi, I'm a homeless advocate in the downtown area, in the Skid Row area, and I was listening to your show about homelessness. I work with homeless women in particular every day, and I think that you should have a show about people that believe that this is a good way of life. I try to get them off of the streets, you know, and into housing. But I am talking to women that are saying that I want to stay in a shelter, and this is where I want to be. You know, I've noticed that people that stay homeless longer have mental illness, or the mental illness starts to set in. I really got a little bit more information, actually, about homelessness from listening to On the Couch. So thanks a lot, and I hope to hear from you soon.
Thank you. I love when our listeners contribute and share their thoughts and their experiences, and that's what we want. We like, Eric and I like this show better when you participate, and what an important point, and we're hearing that from the front line. So what do we do with people who may want to be on the streets, and how do we support that transition? Really good point.
Well, what we've decided to do here on the couch is every couple of months, we're going to do a recap show of some of the topics we've talked about. And we'll go through on the website. You can see some of our past shows and our upcoming shows. Our podcasts are there. You can see everything we've talked about. And coming up, we've got intimacy.
Intimacy, such an important topic. What does that mean? Are we becoming less intimate with each other? Is it something that's socially constructed? What are the benefits of intimacy? And most importantly, finally, are we going to be intimate and falling in love with robots in the next 50 years?
Whoa. I didn't expect to take that turn.
Think about that.
After that, we've got fear of commitment. So you can see on our website that we have weeks in advance planned out. So what we're going to do is we're going to sort of recap those episodes every few months and touch slightly on these topics here and there. So, Pam, if you're listening, that is when we will have you on to discuss the issue of homeless people who want to be homeless.
Absolutely.
Because I don't think we did that fully on our homeless show. So thank you so much, Pam, for listening to the entire program. And again, if you'd like to participate like Pam did, just go to onthecouchnow.com. Our phone number is right there. All of our social media is right there. Our upcoming shows, all our past shows are right on iTunes at the click of a button, onthecouchnow.com. You can also sit on the couch with Dr. Leanna. Just click on clinical services on the right-hand side of the website and get all that information. Well, it's been a great show.
Great show. Another one. Thanks for listening out there.
And we'll be back next week on the couch with Dr. Leanna.
This show furnished by Coast Psychological Services.